I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What's up, Pitt fans? Welcome back to another Pitt Mailbag here on the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel and podcast network. He is Chris Carter. I'm Noah Hiles. Carter, the football season is concluded. We recap that Saturday evening. I don't think we need to talk any more about the Duke loss or really even the X's and O's from an opening show standpoint here because we've covered that all. Obviously, a lot to get into. The Post-Gazette broke the story Sunday afternoon. Frank Cignetti is out as the team's offensive coordinator. We got a lot of questions involved with that, along with other big future choices this program has to make moving forward. Also some Pitt basketball. But before we get into all of that, we've got to talk about our show's presenting sponsor, which is Mike's Beer Bar. Whether if you're in town for a Steelers, Pirates, or Pitt game, Mike's Beer Bar is right across the street from PNC Park, and it has the best selection of beer in town, as well as amazing food options. They have over 20 TVs, and you can catch all of your NFL, college football, Pirates, Penguins, Riverhounds, and Premier League action right at Mike's. Come on in and try one of their 500 different available beers, 300 of them being local beers, as well as their 80 different local craft beers available on tap. You can also get a flight to try out every option you can dream of, and trust me, you won't run out of favorites because I never do, and I'm always there. Try their steak on a stone for an awesome meal where you can choose how hot you want your steak cooked with a heated stone right in front of you as you enjoy a night out in Pittsburgh. Come on over to Mike's Beer Bar and get your sports fix and experience the best bar in Pittsburgh. Mike's Beer Bar might be where Carter and I are heading now that we get a little bit of a free weekend. I don't know what to do with myself. Sure, there's basketball, but like I was looking, I don't get on a plane once the entire month of December.
That's nice.
I can't relate to that. I feel like when it's under 70 degrees, I am on an airplane on my weekends. We get to watch
all the conference championships on Saturday.
College hoops, NBA, NHL, NFL.
And then we get to cover Pitt Clemson the next day. Like, this is going to be amazing.
Not a bad life we live, Carter. All right, let's get into the questions. First one comes from Matt. What is your suspicion on why the quarterback situation went the way it did the last 2 years? Stubbornness from both Pat/Frank, lack of competition, Nate not being a good practice player, poor talent evaluation. I'm truly at a loss other than ego or ignorance. This question comes from Matt. Carter, what do you think? And to recap, in Cignetti's two seasons at Pitt, five different guys started at quarterback. Yep. Five of them. Three of those were guys who came in from the transfer portal, and two of them were recruits from Pitt. So, and it's just a mix of everyone, you know, the recruits, obviously Cignetti didn't bring either of those two when he brought in two of the three guys from the portal, injuries, everything. It was just kind of a mess. What do you think, Carter?
I mean, certainly I think that Cignetti, had to be part of the process of bringing some of those guys in the transfer portal in. So he wanted to give those guys a shot, but let's also not forget like Keaton Slovis, when he came to Pitt from USC, like his tape was very impressive. Dude had a cannon arm. He had a lot of things to put together. And Nick Patty was all, as much as he's beloved and he had a great Sun Bowl, like there were a lot of tangible things you could see on tape that, like, you know, if Keaton Slovis plays the way he's supposed to play, he'll be a better quarterback. So, like, I get doing that with him. But at the end of the day, you need to go with the guy that makes the best decisions on the field, the guy that the team, you know, that kind of feels the team better. And, you know, in the past 2 years, at the end of the season, we've been looking around, and in both times, it's been the guy that was recruited by Pitt itself to come in naturally into the program rather than coming in through the transfer portal. You know, Phil Jurkovec, you know, you and I were at some of those practices. There were times where he was whizzing the ball deep down the field, and it looked like, hey, there's something there. I truly think what happened to Phil Jurkovec was a breakdown in his body because he took a lot of hits over the years, but also just when things started to break down on the field, he didn't adjust well. He didn't keep reading the defense, and he kind of got down on himself. that kind of confidence hurts everybody. And I think that that's where you saw the problems with him. I think Christian, you know, he's a young quarterback just like Nate Yarnell. I think he's more of a strong-armed guy that can force the ball into tight situations but isn't as good at reading the field as Nate Yarnell. And that was mainly the difference between the two of them. And that's where Nate Yarnell kind of won out in the end of the season. I'm not sure if it's an ego thing as much as, hey, we brought this guy into the transfer portal. We think he's pretty good in practice. We should be playing that guy versus an injury standpoint. But I do think it should show Pitt something that Pat Narduzzi, in his current offensive coordinator search, which we will get into in a little bit, that what they should be looking for isn't necessarily a quarterback that will just be able to play in a tough offense and make the occasional big throw. You want a quarterback that is a field general, that makes all the right decisions, that can decipher what defenses are doing and see the field. That is your key priority. It's the biggest thing that people are looking for in the recruiting process. You got to find those type of guys and build your offense around that.
I'm going to go through the timeline here of all the different quarterbacks because I think it's a multitude of factors. We'll start with Keaton Slovis, who, as you pointed out, Carter, I mean, that was a big get for Pitt.
Yes.
Like in any national magazine that you would read, like previewing the 2022 college football season, he was listed as one of the biggest transfer portal pickups at the quarterback position in the country. It wasn't just like in the ACC. Nationally, that was regarded to as a very big get for Pitt.
Yeah.
And I think that played a huge role in why he had such a long leash. This was the first time Pitt really did anything like that. And like, because it's early in the transfer portal era. They went out, they made a big splash off of a championship season, and they were invested. I've been told that, you know, Narduzzi pretty much determined before the year started that this was who their guy was going to be because they went out and handpicked him. And I don't know if that's the right call or not. I get why he didn't, why he started over Nick Patty. Like, resume-wise, he should have started the year over Nick Patty. And you can make whatever assertions you want off of training camp, but as we saw this past year, every quarterback can look good in training camp because they're not allowed to get hit. It's really right. easy to look good when point. You know you can't be tackled.
It's a good point.
Sure, they're in your face, but at the end of the day, you can throw the ball and follow through completely and know you're not going to get a shot to the ribs. So I think that, yeah, you got to start the year with Slovis. Was there a point in time where they should have made the change? Absolutely. And they didn't because of, I think, Slovis's, the investment they made into him coming in. Also, they didn't know if he was going to be their quarterback next year or not. So that explains the whole Slovis thing. Obviously, because of the way they handled that, he got hurt. That led to Yarnell starting against Western Michigan last year. And then he left, which led to Patty starting the bowl game. But we'll get into now the quarterback problems this year, mm-hmm. where last year's were pretty much, I would say, heavily on Narduzzi. This year was on Frank. I don't care, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not trying to echo what Pat says, where it's Frank's call, it's Frank's call. But this was the first time he had an opportunity to go get his guys.
Yep.
And his guys clearly took preference over others.
Yes.
He could have had Nick Patty back this year, but he went out and he got two guys in the transfer portal instead. And so that resulted in Nick Patty not returning for his final year of eligibility. And I think if Nick Patty did come back, this team probably finishes better than 3-9. So who does he go out and get? He gets Phil Dracovic and he gets Christian Vayer. Those two guys finished the fall camp number 1 and 2 on the depth chart because that's who he went out and picked. No kidding.
Yeah.
They went. I mean, I don't think they did anything NIL-wise to get Vayer because he's an international guy. He's from Canada. But I know they made an investment into Dracovic, and it made sense why you would probably start him. Again, taking the training camp thing into consideration here, where he could not get hit. Everyone that we talked to, Chris, on top of seeing it with our own eyes,
yep.
they glowed about how good this guy looked, how much better he looked than Keaton because of his mobility, because of his size, his toughness, how he made an effort to be friends with the dudes on the team, unlike Slovis did in 2022. All of those things, they stood out, and he was going to be exactly what they needed, just a game manager who would protect the football and make a couple big throws when it was needed.
Yep.
That did not work out, clearly. Nope. And they went on to the next option, which I think based off the bodies of work that we've seen, probably should have been Nate Yarnell. But because the guy making the choices...
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Was Cignetti, he went with the guy who he brought in. He didn't recruit Nate Yarnell. He didn't. And so, and while I think that he had nothing against Nate Yarnell, when your job's on the line, you're going to go with someone that you handpicked rather than someone who was still at the program when you arrived. And so I think if it was Narduzzi's call completely, Yarnell would have started after Dracovic got benched. I think he's been high on Yarnell from the very beginning, but Narduzzi trusted his OC. I do believe that was the truth. And they went with Veyer. And Veyer showed promise early on, but the difference is Narduzzi made the choice to bench Veyer. I've had that confirmed. I reported that. And when Narduzzi got involved, that's when we saw Nate Yarnell come in. So to recap everything, Narduzzi was behind why Keaton over Patty. But then Frank was the reason why it took so long for Nate Yarnell to come up this year and become the starter. So it's a combination of both things. Talent evaluation, yeah, like I said, you're going to go with guys with more established resumes, which explains Keaton and Phil. You're going to go with guys that you pick, which explains this year. Mm-hmm. And you're going to go with, you know, who you feel is going to save your job. And that's who they picked. So that kind of explains it all from my perspective, from what I've heard, and just from breaking things down, as this has been the number one thing pretty much anyone on the beat has been forced to think about now for 2 years. Anything to add on that, Carter, before we move on?
No, I think your timeline is very important. And the importance is of guys believing in their guys. Like that's the thing. As much as you or I or anyone else, you know, I talk with a good breeder of ours, Teddy W. Teddy W is the man. He always hits us up and has questions, has good questions, good insights. You know, we even argue and he's very respectful. I like talking to him. He even talks Steelers with our guy, Brian Batko. But one thing Teddy said is he believed in Nate Yarnell. And you know what? Teddy looked right at the end of the year. But here's the thing is that as much as we want to believe that, how many people said that about Christian Veyer, you know, at different points of the year? We said it. Everyone thought at different points in time, like, hey, there's my guy. The coaches are the guys that are seeing this in practice and outside of practice and studying this overall. And even they're getting it wrong. So, yes, someone out there is going to get randomly right and just basically what based off of a hunch or a feeling. But this is such a hard thing to do. It's why so many teams get it wrong because it's not just Pitt. Look across the country, not just in the college football, but in the NFL. People getting it wrong all the time. It's just part of the game. Quarterback is so hard to judge. It's why when you hit it, you have to capitalize on it.
And it's easier when you make an offensive coordinator transition, like the last one that Pitt made prior to Cignetti coming in. Well, it was Watson to Whipple, right?
Yep.
They didn't have any questions as to who the quarterback was going to be at that point in time. You have your quarterback. Mm-hmm. And the portal wasn't what it was then, and NIL didn't exist. So that was what you were doing. Unless you could go get a true freshman to come in and beat out Kenny Pickett, which wasn't happening. So that's just what it was. Where this year, it's in this era of football, it's completely different. It's kind of like professional sports where you could just come in and take over with your own guys. So, yeah, it just made everything that Chris said, where teams already get this stuff wrong. It's even more convoluted now based off of the instant access to resources that exist.
Absolutely.
All right. Jamel wants to know, any initial thoughts on who Coach Narduzzi will target for OC? Also, any changes on if there will be additional coaching changes? I'll start with this one.
Sure.
First things first, I think there's absolutely going to be other coaching changes. We don't need to talk at this about that at nauseam. We've been talking about this for months now. There are going to be other changes on the offensive staff. I've heard rumors. I'm sure Carter has as well. Nothing that we can report yet, but expect those reports in the next couple of weeks that there will be other assistants either relieved of their duties, retiring, or accepting other positions at other programs. As far as the OC targeting goes, I just wrote this big piece. You can read it at the Post Gazette site. It'll probably be in the e-edition tomorrow as well, where I had 9 names of candidates. And I kind of divided them into 3 categories. First calls, which are guys that I think should be like top of the list, Narduzzi should call this week. Notable names, to give a few away, guys like Dino Babers, Sean Lewis, something that like names that like all college football fans would really know and be like, oh, no, duh, you got to throw them in there. And then outside the box options and, you know, names that you probably wouldn't think of off the top of your head, but could make sense if Pitt could muster up maybe the money or the sales pitch to get these guys. Some things I want to point out. One, Pitt fans. It doesn't have to be a former Pitt person.
It doesn't.
I don't care if they're a former coach, if they're a former player, if they went to grad school here, whatever the case. If they're from Western Pennsylvania, you're allowed to branch away from the university's history. There are other competent coaches all throughout the country. Pat Narduzzi himself had no Pitt ties when he was hired. And I would say overall, that was a pretty good hire. You can go, you can do that. And I don't think, aside from Cignetti, did any of the other OCs have any prior Pitt ties? No. And no. I think Cignetti was probably the worst of the bunch. So there you go.
You could say Mark Whipple close because he was with the Steelers for a while and there's the proximity there, but still it's not the same.
Right. So as far as this goes, and people are throwing out names like Brennan Marion, obviously Shanahan also was a graduate assistant for Pitt in 2015 in Narduzzi's first year, who was the wide receiver before Marion, now the Chargers wide receiver coach. I have him listed. Chris Beatty. You know, these are guys that I think are reasonable candidates. However, Brian Batko, our coworker, former Pitt beat writer, reached out and told me after reading my post, he said, he pointed out, Narduzzi has never hired someone back at Pitt. Once they've left, they've never come back to, and been rehired. So I don't know what to expect on that front. I don't know if that would necessarily play or apply for Shanahan there. So I have a whole bunch of list of names. I'd still say Shanahan's probably the favorite. If I could pick anyone, it'd probably be Joe Moorhead. But those would be the two names that I would look at. Chris, what about you?
I mean, here's the thing. If it was my ultimate choice and I had all to say, I would say Brennan Marion because I think I saw firsthand what he did for this offense. And listen, Chris Beatty, fine coach, but you look at the problems that existed in his wide receiver room and how in a year – Brennan Marion took that receiver room, made it from having the most drops in college football to being one of the best in college football. And I'm okay with Beatty staying in the NFL and doing stuff with the Chargers. That's fine there. If I'm Pitt, Brennan Marion would be my choice. But I also know, like you, Pat Narduzzi ain't bringing him back. And I don't think Brennan wants to come back. I think Brennan's like, I showed y'all what you wanted. Your OC left, and I was standing right there, and you chose to go get someone else. And that person didn't even work out for you too well. So if I'm Brennan Marion, I'm like, look, and right now Brennan Marion is being celebrated at UNLV and being talked about, but getting, you know, he should be getting head coaching opportunities. I think that he's fine moving up, hit the ladder the way that he's going. But I like Moorhead as an example of what you're talking about there, because, you know, he kind of fits the billing there, I think, a little bit better. You know, I also like one that you pointed out, Sean Lewis, the guy from Colorado who, you know, I thought engineered some really good passing offense for the Buffaloes. And he got relieved of his duties. But you know what? I think that Pitt would have a better offensive line than Colorado did this past year. And I think that was one of the things that held Colorado back. And if he can engineer an offense around Yarnell, and if Pitt can keep the primary target, like if Bub Means come back, if Kanate Mumfield's still around, if Kenny Johnson continues to grow, maybe some of those freshman wide receivers start to prop up. This can be a unit that can be a really good passing threat. And if he builds a system into that, but that's my biggest thing here is get a guy like Sean Lewis. You want a guy who can build a passing offense to be more of a modern passing offense. I think the day needs to be done with Pat Narduzzi trying to live in the idea that you have to run the ball consistently all throughout games. It's good to be able to run the ball. It's good to be able to do that. You know, that was still a part of Pitt's offense when Kenny Pickett was being at his prime in the ACC championship year. But it needs to be after the fact. I think that in today's college football, you need, and when you have the quarterback that you think can be the guy, build around that. That's the kind of OC you should get. I think Sean Lewis would be a heck of a pick.
I do too, Carter. The reality is I do not think Sean Lewis is going to be an offensive coordinator. He's already rumored to be the Syracuse in the mix for the Syracuse head coaching spot. And I just think that he can quite frankly do better than Pitt. And that's nothing down on Pitt. It's just like a head coaching job at a Power Five school is better than an OC job at a Power Five school financially and just prowess. So Sean Lewis would be a great one, but I agree on the sense with you that they need to have a scheme like Sean Lewis. They need to be able to score and spread the field out and get the ball to athletes in space. Yep. And it can't be an offense that looked really good in 2005, because we're not in 2005. We're in 2023. We're going to be in 2024. That's not going to bring recruits to your program. And that's why I'm high on a guy like Moorhead, simply because he has the modern offense down pat. You look at what he did at Penn State. You look at what he did at Oregon. And he's recruited this area super well throughout his tenure. And those relationships he has with coaches that already exist in this area, you might see a lot less of the 4 or 5 stars make their way to the other Power Five team in this state and maybe stay in the backyard here. And I think that's one where you got to consider. Honestly, though, Shanahan, I think, is probably the perfect mix, where he's going to be affordable. He's going to be attainable. Pitt might be the best offer he gets, and it would make a lot of sense there. But I agree with you, Carter. It can't be an older guy who just wants to be run heavy. It's got to be someone young and intuitive, and who cares if they're only here for a couple of years? That means they did a good job more often than not, if they leave on their own after being here for a couple of years. So we'll move forward now. Corey wants to know what to make of Tyquan Underwood's future with Pitt. The receivers look lost all this season, he said. He can't tell if that was on him or Cignetti. I'll start. I think the receivers were the best performing position group on the offense.
Anti lost.
I just think, early on, they looked lost. The whole passing game looked lost. I think that had more to do with who was at quarterback and Pitt's ability to protect who was at quarterback than it did the receivers. I think it could be argued Bub Means was the best offensive player on Pitt this year. Mm-hmm. And all of his production, not just some of it, like 90% of his production came after Dracovic was benched. The guy was an absolute weapon with Vayer and Yarnell. He was scoring touchdowns, big plays, all of it. Exactly what was advertised all spring and summer. I think Kenny Johnson kind of disappeared as the year went on. That's unfortunate, but I thought Mumfield looked good. Dejon Reynolds looked to be a promising guy with, I think, 2 more years of eligibility. I don't know. I personally, Carter, I thought the receivers were maybe the only position on the entire team that looked better as a group, not just individually, because there was no Jared Wayne on this team, but as a group. That was the only position group that I think took a step forward this year.
Yeah, I think Tyquan Underwood did a good job coaching them. Like, and that's the thing, is that you can say receivers are always going to look lost when quarterback play is bad.
Right.
You know, it's just going to happen. But did those receivers ever, blow up at their quarterback? Did they ever pout? No, they didn't. And in fact, I joked around with with Bub Means last week. They said, like, hey, they brought up when it was Vayer becoming the quarterback, they put up a Canadian flag. When Nate became the quarterback, they said, hey, we're good. We want to get something Texas up in our receiver room because we want to support him. There is such a positivity that comes out of that room despite every reason to feel negative. Bub Means can be like, man, this was my year to set up to say, hey, I deserve a shot at the NFL and I didn't get to have it. But he, instead of saying me, he's saying let's go. We can win this. And he's making plays and not whining. Same for Konate Mumfield, who I think is such an underrated weapon in Pitt's offense. He could complain about all the things that he had to do. There were some plays where he caught like rainbow passes that he should have been killed on, but he still fought through them. I think that all those guys, they kept their heads, and Tyquan Underwood deserves credit for how they kept their heads. He's doing a good job. Not only should he be kept as the wide receiver coach, I think in this offensive coordinator search, maybe he should be looked at in that role as well, and saying, "Hey, you know what? You controlled your room in the right way. Let's look at all the candidates. If you don't like the candidates that are in the field that you're talking to, maybe Tyquan Underwood was the guy that you want boosting up your room."
I would like to see that, because I think he would do a good job. I just don't think you can make that hire. You cannot make an internal hire after a 3-9 season. You just can't do it. I agree that I think Tyquan Underwood will be an offensive coordinator at a Power 5 school one day. And I would venture to say that that day is probably coming within the next five years. So, I don't know if that's going to be at Pitt, but I think he is – if I had to keep one person on the offensive staff, it'd be him. So that's just where I feel – that's my analysis on Coach Underwood. So
I feel you.
Steve wants to know, which Pitt seniors do we believe will be drafted this year? So as of recording, I think the only one to declare for the draft is Marquez Williams, which, shout out to him. There's a cool graphic, but I always find it funny when six-year seniors declare for the draft. It's like, what
else are you going
to
do?
Yeah. Are you coming back to get a law degree? I don't know what else.
Don't become at Pitt Law like that.
I'm not. I'm just saying, not everyone goes the Chris Carter route and goes Pitt Law. Some guys want to go to the NFL. All right. Just because you decided to get a law degree and not go to the league, they don't want to do that.
I could have had a spot, Noah.
You're right. All right. Anyway, so Marquez is going. No one else has made their announcement yet. But I'd have to assume MJ Devonshire is probably going to go. Matt Gonsalves, I think, is likely. Cradle and Zubovic don't have eligibility. They'll probably do something similar to what we saw Gabe Hoy and Marcus Miner do. They'll train locally. Yeah. But as far as draft realistic expectations, I think it's Devonshire, it's Gonsalves, and maybe Shane Simon. I think that's about it. Carter, anyone else?
I think those are the main ones. If Gonsalves can get healthy for the combine, which I'm not sure if he can, I'm not sure of his recovery process, and show some people some good things on some field drills, I think with his size and his experience, he'll get a look somewhere. I think that is a shot there. MJ Devonshire is a peculiar case, because I think MJ Devonshire has the demeanor you want of a cornerback. He just doesn't have, I think, you want him to come off a better year than what this past year was for Pitt heading into the draft. I think that I've talked to guys that have, NFL resumes and look at guys, and I've asked them about guys like MJ Devonshire, and they've said there's stuff there, but might want to shore up this over here or that over there. And if MJ Devonshire wants to be a guy that's brought up in the draft and not in a seventh round or an undrafted guy that's a priority signing, and if he wants to make himself maybe an earlier day three pick, he needs to put on better, I think, more complete tape in one more year of college football, and then blow up that combine. If he runs a 4.3 speed, and he does what Damari Mathis did, and having an explosive broad jump, an explosive high jump, and those types of things, he'll get noticed really quickly. But Damari Mathis also was a mid to late day three guy, so you look at that. But I think MJ Devonshire, he has pedigree, he has history. I think he just might need one more season that will boost his resume. But if he went right now, I do think he would have a chance to be a late day three pick, but just pending on what he does at the combine.
There's just in my opinion, talking on MJ, there's just too many proven success stories for Pitt cornerbacks that go
day three.
And
maybe they can help Marquez Williams too.
And yes, I don't think Quez will get drafted because of his size, but I fully expect Quez to enter the final day of cuts next year. And be on the bubble of making an NFL roster, because despite his size, he's put together an incredible body of work that'll show up well on the game film. And but talking about MJ real quick, like you said, Carter, of what he can do at the combine, MJ Devonshire is a better athlete than Pinnock, than all the Damari Mathis and all of those guys. He's faster than them. He can probably jump higher, more explosive. I think he's going to test great at the combine. He will do well with all the mental stuff as well.
I think so too.
I get the concern, and I think that the reserve is we expected MJ to be like a second or third round guy based off of what he could do. And the intangibles there, and he's not going to be that. He'll be a day three pick. But I just think if you're a defensive back with a year of eligibility at this university and you can be a day three pick, if you perform well at the combine, you got to go. That's your call. That's your ticket out, just because there are too many guys that have taken that route from Pitt and done it successfully and made a good professional career for themselves for you to not try to attempt that same path.
So. I hear you. Let's get to this last question.
All right. Last question is from Dylan, and it's a hoops question, which we are going to answer and then head to basketball for media availability.
Yes.
Dylan wants to know how many more non-conference losses can Pitt basketball realistically afford this season? Will a loss to Missouri or West Virginia put it behind the eight ball like last year's non-conference losses did? Carter, I'll start with you. Obviously, before I hand it over to you, we should point out Pitt has one non-conference loss right now. We lost to Florida, who is a top 40 KenPom team. And I don't know. I think we'll probably be ranked in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think Florida's pretty good. So I don't think that loss hurts them too much in the KenPom. I think Missouri had a bad loss to Jackson State. So that could come into things. West Virginia, they're dealing with a lot right now. You know, I think you do want to beat those teams. So I think they can afford one of those losses, but not both of them. But I also think that Pitt's in a position where they play the way that they've been playing. I think that they'll beat both of these teams. And, you know, Clemson might be a bigger test to them than either of them, in my opinion. But point being, they need to handle their business against those teams. Then after that, it's just Canisius, South Carolina State, Purdue, Fort Wayne, and then your full ACC schedule starts. So I think as long as they go 1-1, they'll be fine in these games, but preferably you would want to go 2-0, and then that could set up a really good slate for the rest of the season and not be as down in the KenPom as they were trying to fight back at the end of last season.
Yeah, I think overall it might have room for one loss, but in reality, I mean, Missouri and West Virginia do not look like that great of teams right now.
They aren't. I agree.
So, like, I think if Pitt's in a really good spot where it's at right now. Like, if Pitt can stay in the low 40s, high 30s in KenPom heading into conference play, it's going to be in a position where if it just does what it did last year in conference play to jump into the tournament conversation and jump into the rankings a lot earlier on. And it might still be a bubble team, but it won't be like a Dayton team. It'll be like a 9 seed if it just has, you know, an above average ACC slate. I would say this team should not be an underdog in any of its remaining non-conference games. I think it should be a favorite on the road in West Virginia, albeit a slight favorite. I think it should be a notable favorite against Missouri Tuesday night. And then the rest of these games, yeah, Pitt has no business losing to the other teams on its
non-conference. They can't lose those games.
So I think if Pitt's going to lose any game before it's like real conference slate picks up, I know it has the one game against Clemson, but I'm talking like in January, the game to lose is to Clemson, because that's a worthy opponent. You don't want to lose to Missouri. You don't want to lose to West Virginia. So if you want to stay where, at the very least, if you're Pitt, you want to stay where you're at right now, because where you're at right now is in a horrible spot. You're not going to make up a ton of ground, I think, by winning out the rest of your non-conference. You're going to make up ground by winning out non-conference and also beating Clemson. That's what needs to be done. So if you're just going to look at the non-conference, you should win every game. That's my take. Carter, any final thoughts as we wrap this one up?
Nope. We just need to get to Pitt because we got that availability in about 35 minutes.
All right. That's all Chris has got. That's all I got. We thank you for tuning in as always, and keep tuning in to the Post-Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel, podcast network for all of your Pittsburgh sports coverage by the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Take care.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.